Welcome to Carbon Compass, where we explore meaningful conversations around driving South Africa towards a more sustainable future. This podcast is brought to you by Brundtland, where we use our in-house expertise to break down complex climate and sustainability topics in a way that is accessible and actionable. Brundtland is a purpose-built consultancy committed to empowering people to create a sustainable planet. We help key stakeholders navigate the complexities of a carbon-constrained world, while balancing the needs of today with the ability of future generations to meet their needs in a responsible and equitable manner. Having successfully issued and commercialized over 7.5 million carbon credits across various sectors and technologies, Brundtland has established itself as a leading carbon revenue generation partner in Southern Africa. I'm Emma Reinecke, a sustainability consultant at Brundtland, and I'll be your host for today's episode. I'm joined by Jan Willem Timmer, principal consultant at Brundtland with over a decade of experience across economics, public policy, and climate change. Jan Willem holds degrees in economics, law, and finance from Maastricht University, Harvard Law School, and the University of Oxford. Jan Willem has a deep understanding of global climate regulation, and he's an ideal candidate for discussing South Africa's recently released draft carbon budget regulations, as he directly assisted the Department of Forestry, Fishery, and Environment, or DFFE, in drafting them. Welcome to the podcast, Jan Willem.
Thanks, Emma.
Before we dive in, Jan Willem, I have an icebreaker for you. If you had a carbon budget, what would you spend it on?
That depends on how big it is. Generally, they say that bigger is better, but in this case, I think we're actually trying to reduce it over time. So, yeah.
Right. So a moderate response to the carbon budget.
Yes.
Okay, let's start with the basics. What exactly is a carbon budget?
A carbon budget is like a normal budget, financial budget. It gives you a maximum amount of spending, sort of, but then not in terms of money, but in terms of greenhouse gas emissions that you're allowed to do in a certain time period, so per year mostly, by entities, companies, or even on a national level, you could impose a carbon budget.
And I assume the purpose of a carbon budget is to reduce overall greenhouse gas emissions. How does that work?
Yes, that's correct. So when you've set the budget that you're allowed to emit, then it's normal that you would reduce it over time, right? So that's the idea. You start at a certain point and then you reduce it by a certain percent every year so that in the end you reach your climate goals.
And why are the carbon budget regulations being introduced now?
Well, that has to do with South Africa's climate policy. The government here has a couple of climate policies. They have the carbon tax, for example. But they also have recently implemented the Climate Change Act. And it's important to note that the Act mandates the imposition of these carbon budgets. The important sections for this, they have been deferred for now. So Section 26, 27. But in the end, the Act has been, enacted. And these sections will at some point also be enacted with it. And thus the regulations that are now in draft format, they will be in force.
Okay, let's talk a little bit more about the scope of these regulations. I understand that the carbon budgets apply to Scope 1 emissions. For any listeners that don't know, could you explain what Scope 1 emissions are and how they're different from Scope 2 and 3 emissions?
So that has to do with, originally it goes back to the Greenhouse Gas Protocol. They define these scopes, 1, 2, and 3. And it has to do with the type of emissions. So Scope 1 emissions, they are defined as direct emissions under the control of an entity. So you can do something about those. You emit them yourself on site. Scope 2 emissions, that's indirect emissions. So that has to do with electricity consumption, electricity or heat that you buy from other people, other companies, and those emissions. Those are generally less within your control to do something with. You can still do certain things like energy efficiency measures, but in general, it's not as controllable. Scope 3 is up and down the value chain. So the people that supply you, their emissions, and the people that you supply.
Okay, so in other words, the carbon budgets would only apply to emissions that are under the direct operational control of someone who is allocated a carbon budget.
That's correct.
Right. The regulations refer to these affected entities as data providers. Who actually qualifies as a data provider?
as it stands, it's the major industrial players and electricity producers like Eskom. So the regulations, they contain an annex, Annex 2, and there they define certain activities like electricity production, iron and steel production, refineries, coal mining, things like that. And if you have emissions over 30,000 tons per year of CO2 equivalent, then you are included and you do these activities.
Okay, I see. As I understand it, data providers will have to pay for the emissions that exceed their carbon budgets. And you've already discussed that the carbon budgets are a tool of the Climate Change Act. But certain emitters are already paying for their emissions under the Carbon Tax Act. So how do these carbon budgets fit in with the carbon tax regime, if at all?
Now, that's a good question. So it's two different policy instruments, basically. You have the carbon tax, which is a pricing instrument. And then you have these carbon budgets, which is more a cap on the quantity of emissions. Now, the Carbon Tax Act has already been enacted. The EFV is now working on these carbon budgets. And the idea is, because industry has been consulted on this and they've expressed certain concerns, that these instruments are not aligned. So to align them now, they are saying that within the carbon budget that is set for a company, you pay the normal carbon tax, including all the allowances. If you exceed your carbon budget, then you pay a penalty, a rate of 640 Rand, and you're not allowed any allowances. So that's then when you exceed it, go over the max that you've been allocated, then that's your fine, sort of.
The regulations also come with technical guidelines. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, that's like the for example, the National Greenhouse Gas Reporting Regulations, the act that mandate the regulations, and then these come with guidelines on how to exactly implement. So the regulation is fairly basic, straightforward. The guidelines, they provide more guidance on how to monitor, report, verify emissions, and sort of basically how to implement the regulations in more detail.
Thank you. Let's talk a little about how this will actually work in practice. Who allocates the budget and who receives a carbon budget?
Yeah, let's start with the latter. So the data providers, they'll receive their budget. So a maximum amount of emissions you can emit every year. The one who implements it or enforces it, that's the DFFV. So in case of the carbon tax, National Treasury is responsible. In case of the carbon budget system, it's the Department of Forestry, Fisheries and Environment.
Okay. And what are the affected entities, the data providers, actually required to do to comply with the regulations?
The carbon budget will be for 5 years. That's what they call the commitment period. So they will have to request a budget. Now, to do that, they have to report their emissions over the past 5 years. They have to put in place a mitigation plan. So the budget will be set. The DFV will tell the entity or the company how much they need to reduce, and then they need to present a plan on how they're going to do that. So once these plans have been approved, then it's for the company to implement it, and they need to report back to the DFV every year on this. It's important to note that these emissions and these plans also need to be verified independently. And that's not every year, but the idea is that at least at the start of the commitment period, you do an independent verification, at the end and at some point in between.
So the data providers are not necessarily mandated to stay within their carbon budgets, but they must report transparently on their emissions. What happens if they exceed the budgets?
Then that 640 Rand kicks in. So for every ton over their budget, they pay 640 Rand. And that's quite a bit because there's no allowances allowed. And these can get quite high, these allowances. So it's not uncommon for a company to have 70 or 80% being deducted from their emissions on top of which the headline rate is imposed. So 640 Rand, that's quite substantial.
Okay. And I understand that the carbon budgets have been introduced in phases. Can you talk a little bit about the phases and where we are right now?
Yeah, so it already goes back quite a while. In the period 2016 to 2020, there was what they call the voluntary phase. So in this period, companies could actually voluntarily participate in the system, report their emissions, present their mitigation plan. And in this way, as an incentive to do this, they would get a 5% of discount on their carbon tax, allowance on their carbon tax. So that was quite a lot. And this also incentivized quite a few companies to voluntarily participate. This allowed the DfV to get information about these companies and emissions, the way they can mitigate, so their mitigation potential, their opportunities, which is normally not the information that the government has. And so it was a sort of a win-win for both sides. Then from 2021 to 2025, the voluntary phase was extended. During this period, which we're in now, the DfV basically designed and is busy still designing the mandatory phase, which is supposed to kick in 2026. So then it's not optional anymore. Then companies will actually have to abide by their budgets.
So at the time of recording, these regulations are still in draft form and they're open for public comment. Does the 2026 commencement date for the next phase mean that we can expect these regulations to be published and finalized by the end of this year?
Yeah, that's a tricky question. As you say, they've just been gazetted, so open for public comment. Companies will now have a month to comment on this. The comments still need to be addressed. Then these budgets still need to be allocated. So it's in my opinion, it's very unlikely that the system will be effective or in place by 2026. And it's more likely that we'll commence with the mandatory phase in, say, starting 2027.
And as I understand it, the DFFE has three methodologies for allocating carbon budgets. What are they and how are they applied?
Yeah, so when you put the regulation in place, you obviously also need a methodology to determine these budgets. Now, there are three ways. The first one, the most preferred one, is the product-based benchmarking approach. There you calculate an emission intensity and then put a certain production volume on top of that, then you have your budget. The second approach is what they call the mitigation potential analysis. And there they look more in depth at the mitigation opportunities that companies have. So some companies have opportunities which mitigate a lot of GHGs and are fairly cheap. Other companies have options that are very expensive and only mitigate a bit. So there's a balance there. And then the third approach, which is the least preferred, but you also need the least amount of information to determine it, is the fixed target approach. And there you just take the historical emissions of a company and you reduce that by a certain percentage, say 3% or 5%, or by the NDC trajectory. And then you set the budget for the coming 5 years in that way.
Okay. So that preferred method, the product-based benchmarking, favors an approach which relies on emissions intensity. Can you talk a little bit about what that means and what the benefits are of that approach?
Yeah, so if you calculate a product-based benchmark, you basically look at the emissions associated with producing a certain product, say cement or iron and steel, or a megawatt hour of electricity. And you see the emissions associated with that. You divide those two, and then you get the amount of emissions in tons per CO2e per ton of product.
Right.
If you then put that on top of your forecast production for the coming 5 years, then you get an overall total budget. And that's how they want to do it here. And the benefit of that is it's not dependent on your production level. So even if you produce a bit more than expected, you will get a slightly higher budget because it's based on the intensity per product, per ton of product. If you, for example, take the fixed target, then that is it, right? It's X amount that you're allowed to emit, say 100. If you produce 50% more in the next 5 years, you're not allowed to emit more than the 100. So you probably close down, say, September or something like that of the year.
Wow. Okay. And how is that emissions intensity benchmark determined for an activity?
Now, as I said, it's on a product basis, and you basically determine the amount of emissions to produce that product, and you divide it by the production volume. That's the ideal way to do it. It's not always possible. So some production processes are so integrated that you can't differentiate the emissions and allocate it to certain products. So in that case, you would use a fallback. But that's rare. In most cases, we found that product-based benchmarking is very well possible. And this is also the international experience. If you look at the EU ETS, for example, or the California cap and trade, it's mostly product-based.
Okay. I understand that you worked quite closely with stakeholders. What were some of their biggest concerns?
Yeah, we actually, as part of working with the DFFE, we consulted with most of the sectors in the country, the most of the affected sectors, of course, that would be covered by the system. Yeah, there's a variety of concerns, obviously. If you look at South Africa and the economy in general, it's not going that great at the moment. And this would add a constraint on top, right? So you would have to start working on reducing your emissions, spending on mitigation measures, or you would have to pay the penalty. So that's a big concern, that's not possible, that they can't pass it on to their consumers, their customers. Other things are, it's an additional piece of regulation, right? So in addition to all the things that they're already dealing with, they now have to comply with these carbon budget regulations. And there's still quite a bit of uncertainty there, right? The draft regulations have now been gazetted, but there's still uncertainty on how it's going to be implemented exactly. And now, even if they don't manage to implement it early next year, early 2027 is also not that far ahead.
And how are the regulations addressing some of these concerns?
So DfE is actively, in many ways, consulting with these stakeholders. And stakeholders are allowed to voice their concerns. But it's important to note in setting these carbon budgets, it's not only the benchmark times production, as we just explained, but DfE has to take into account a couple of other things, like socioeconomic circumstances or influences, impacts. They have to look at best available technologies and things like that. So if, for example, a company expects massive job losses because of this regulation, then they can indicate that to the DFFE, and the DFFE will have to take that into account in setting the budget. So it's not only a fixed formula, and there's individual circumstances that need to be taken into account. Yeah, the Act provides for that, so they will take that into account.
Okay, and then just to wrap up, how does South Africa's approach compare to other countries?
Yeah, that's an interesting question as well. So as I said, they have the carbon tax here, and now this pricing instrument, by the way, and now this quantity instrument by setting a fixed budget. And I don't think that is the case anywhere in the world, that you have both systems, or are about to have both systems. It's either a tax, or you set a budget, and then you allow trade. And that's another important distinction, I think. So South Africa sets a fixed budget. That happens in other parts of the country, in the world as well, EUTS in California. But there they not only set the budget, they also allow trading in these emission allowances. So if one company has too many allowances for what it needs, then it can sell that to companies that have too few allowances for a certain price. And in that sense, you create economic efficiency and have a more efficient system in that sense. Now, South Africa has opted not to do that. So I think that's how it compares to the world.
Okay, very interesting. So that brings us to the end of today's conversation. Jan Willem, thank you so much for sharing your insights on the draft carbon budget regulations. Today, we learned what a carbon budget is, who's affected, how carbon budgets are allocated, and how to comply in practice. The carbon budget regulations are open for public comment until the end of September 2025, so if you'd like to comment, you can find details in our show notes or in the draft regulations themselves. Apart from these regulations, other exciting news in the world of carbon finance includes the finalization of the rules for the Paris Agreement Crediting Mechanism, or PACM, last year at COP29. The PACM is a voluntary carbon offset mechanism overseen by the United Nations. While it is not operational yet, the finalization of key rules is an important step towards its implementation, and carbon standards, such as VERA, are already looking to align with this mechanism. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to share it or leave a review to grow our community. You can also learn more about our work by visiting our website, www.brundtland.co.za, or following our LinkedIn page. For business inquiries, please contact us via email at info@brundtland.co.za or telephonically on 011-4477-892, and we'd be happy to discuss ways to collaborate. Until next time.